January 23rd, 2006. It's the Lullabot Podcast, Episode 2. All right, now we can talk.
Woohoo!
We're still working out the technology on this whole thing. I am particularly looking forward to getting the new version of GarageBand, so because it has all the podcasting right in it, and I don't have to go through all the contortions that I'm going through to get this to work right now, so that you can speak to me, Jeff Robbins, and
Matt Westgate. Matt. Life simplification through technology.
Yes, thus is the goal of Lullabot. How was your week, Matt?
It was fun. I learned some new Drupal tips and tricks.
You did? What'd you learn?
I did.
Anything good?
I was talking with Ted Serbinski about the best practices for creating a administrative theme along with a basic site theme, so that when you go to the admin area that it looks different and feels different from the rest of the site. So, yeah, it was really cool, and it was really elegant using the PHP template system.
Cool.
I hope to publish that on Lullabot sometime soon.
Nice. I went through and tested out some modules that I hadn't had a chance to test out. Have you tested out the views module yet?
I've heard many a great thing about it.
It's pretty awesome. You know the thing I like most about it? It uses icons. It's really cool. Drupal has a tendency towards lots of text on the screen, and the views module actually has some like icons to represent the little different things that it does and stuff. And I thought,
so what does it do?
Well, it allows you to have different listings of nodes or items, and then call them up as you want them. So let's say you wanted to list a list of nodes alphabetically, or you had people where they had first name and last name fields. You could list them by their last name field, I believe. This is my cursory overview of the module. If anyone has corrections, we'll let us know, and we'll put them in the next podcast. And so, if you wanted to, you know, list people by last name, you could use the views module to create a view of the nodes. So you wanted to view all of your bio module nodes by last name or something. You could have the views module handle that, and it would list them that way. And then there's been, people have released modules so that you can list within a node. Or you can, you know, just go to link to the views listing and stuff like that. It's neat. It's one of those modules that solves problems that I didn't know I had.
Which is, can you just list the titles then, or is it just title teaser views?
I didn't mess with it that much, but it did have icons, and I thought that was really cool. And actually, I thought it was really cool, and I thought, oh, we should, like, there should be, like, a pool of icons that everybody could use for all their stuff. And as I was reading through the Drupal handbook, there is a pool of icons. The Tango project is a project where they're creating icons for open source software, and those are the icons that are being used in the views module, and everybody should use these icons. And if you're a designer or know a designer, have them contribute so that we can get more icons to use in more things, and because icons are international.
Cool.
Yeah, that word's French. That means international. I also messed with the CCK, Content Creation Kit, that there'd been a lot of talk about, but I didn't realize that there was something that was actually would kind of work, kind of. It kind of works like FlexiNode, kind of, but I get the feeling that it's better, and it's going to be better, and that's very exciting to me.
Yeah, I will probably touch base at that in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Talk more about CCK.
That's some neat stuff. We'll talk more about that definitely in future podcasts. But
CCK will be similar to the way profile module works, but for nodes. That's a very rough idea.
Yeah. One of the functions that I'm hoping for is the ability to add extra fields to existing node types. So, for instance, probably next week I will commit my bio module, which we're using on the Lullabot site. It's not a very complex module, but it's handy nonetheless. But for instance, I mean, it basically just has, you know, title and body, you know, it doesn't have a whole lot of custom fields. But it would be really cool to be able to have another module that would be able to add, for instance, first name, last name, you know, profession, other fields, to that node type, which would work sort of like the profile module, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
You know what else, Matt?
What's that, Jeff?
You know who had a birthday this week?
Me.
I had a birthday this week.
Oh, that's right. Happy birthday.
It's true. And Drupal turned 5. 5.
Yay.
5 this year. 5 years since 1.0 was released.
Yeah, Drupal's pretty mature for 5.
It is. It is. Well, you should see it drinking. Drinks like a fish.
I also saw that Dries and his fiance made a Drupal cake.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Hope they're not sick of M&Ms now.
Yeah, blue and white. Anyways, so this week I think we're going to go through Intro to Drupal. We'll call this episode Intro to Drupal Part 1. How's that sound?
Yeah, I don't think we need any prequels.
Yeah, no, we're going to just start off with episode 1. And we won't even really give you a whole lot of background. So this is where the credits would be scrolling right here. Galaxy far, far away, Drupal, Drupal. Next week we'll do sort of a history of Drupal and let you know where it is. But I think that before we even get into any of that stuff, we should sort of go through and make sure everybody has the glossary, knows what the terms are, because, you know, this is definitely 101 kind of stuff. This is, for a lot of people who are listening, we're going to go through this list and they're going to say, yeah. But we should just cover it so that everybody's on the same page, and then we can talk in a more advanced way in future podcasts.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So the first term I have on my list is CMS, which stands for?
Content Management System.
A blog is a content management system, and I think a lot of people can relate to that. Basically, the idea being that you go onto the website, and it is able to manage its own content. You don't need to create the content on your desktop and upload it into a file on the server. Basically, the server manages its own content. And for a blog, it just manages blog entries usually. It can do some other things. But for Drupal, or a more advanced content management system, it can do more advanced things with the content, and you can have more advanced functions. And certainly Drupal does.
I think that works.
That answers it. PHP. You know what PHP stands for, Matt?
There's a lot of controversy surrounding for what it means or what it stands for.
I actually looked this up.
Really? Last I heard, it was a pre-hypertext processor.
No. It's according to the PHP site, it stands for PHP : hypertext processor. It's what they call a recursive anagram, and it refers to itself. It sort of turns itself inside out by having itself in the thing.
It's easier to define.
Geeked out programmer thing. But anyways, PHP is a scripting language that is open source. It's very well documented on the php.net site. Is that right? php.net?
Yep.
I always get it wrong. And Drupal is written in PHP. What's the what next do we have on our list, Matt?
We have SQL,
which I always refer to as SQL, and I'm trying to correct myself. I did it on the last podcast. I'm trying to change my habit. I don't know where I picked it up, but you know, technically, you're supposed to refer to it as SQL and not SQL, although some people do that, like me.
SQL stands for Structured Query Language, and it's the language that you write in to get the database to talk to the scripting language, PHP. It's the sort of the communication bridge, if you will. And that could segue into the Drupal's database requirements, which are MySQL or PostgreSQL, which are the two different types of databases that Drupal can run on. And so they both use this general language, SQL, to communicate with PHP.
And it's like a standardized language, right? I mean, Microsoft SQL, Microsoft SQL and MySQL and PostgreSQL all basically are the same kind of queries.
They aim for the SQL type queries. Yeah, like you said.
Right. And both of those are open source, correct?
MySQL and PostgreSQL?
Yes. Well, let's just segue into the next item on our list, open source. What does open source mean?
Well, you know, I'm not a licensed guru or anything like that, but what open source I think means is that basically just what it says is that the source code is open for anybody to read, look at. That's the general idea behind the open source. Is while it has authorship, and you know even copyright, the source code is available for anyone to read.
Which also usually sort of implies hackable. You can get in there and modify it, which is one of the great things about Drupal. Is that if you want to build your own module and somebody else's module does something similar or something like that, you can open it up and look at their source and figure out how they did it and use it for yourself. So it becomes a great learning tool as well as a great content management system tool as well. So,
yeah, and I guess there is sometimes that idea that open source software is less secure because the code is available for people to look at and hack. But maybe another way to think about it is that you know, while the hackers can look at it, programmers can look at it too, and you can have a group of people, a really large group of people, that can become familiar with the code, and you know, offer their own ideas and improvements over time, which also makes like the response time to security problems a lot quicker too, because
right.
It's not just a small team of developers now, you have a world of developers maintaining this code. And, you know, it's been shown, I think, time and time again that the response time for, say, something like an Apache, you know, problem or even Drupal security problems tend to be solved quite quicker than some of the other proprietary softwares out there.
Microsoft.
You okay there, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm fine. I have a little bit of a cold.
Okay.
GPL is the next item on our list. GPL, that stands for...
General public license, I believe, and it's one license that you can choose to put your open source works under. And you want to take a crack on what it means?
Well, I think we more can talk about the idea behind it. I mean, certainly you can go, you know, Google GPL and read it for yourself. But basically, the idea behind GPL is you can redistribute the software. The software is open. The software is free to be used and redistributed. You can actually charge your clients for you to install the software for them and stuff like that. There's different flavors of these licenses. There's the MIT license. There's the LGPL. And one of the other things to know is that basically everything in the Drupal repository has to be under GPL.
And I guess it might be easier to describe what GPL is in terms of what it can't do. And the thing that you can't do with GPL code is include it in proprietary software that you're then reselling to other people. You always have to maintain the copyrights, and any code that you hack or modify that has a GPL license to it needs to stay available. You have to give that, you have to contribute that code back. And a great place to go to learn about the licenses, about the different types of open source licenses, is a website, www.opensource.org.
There you go. Let's talk about some Drupal-specific stuff. For instance, when people refer to Drupal Core, what are they referring to? Drupal Core is the modules that are, when you download Drupal, it includes a certain number of modules, certain themes, certain sort of add-ons that are included in the Drupal core. So it's basically
It's the base install.
Yeah. What is a node?
Yeah. You'll hear that a lot. It's basically, a node is a piece of content on Drupal. Examples of nodes are blogs and stories and pages, anything sort of under that create content menu. Things that aren't a node are users. Users are users, and comments are comments. And there's usually a classic debate why comments aren't nodes, and probably the easiest answer to that is in terms of performance. You know, you could easily have 100 or 200 comments on a page, and just the way that Drupal works, there's a lot of hooks and callbacks and all this other stuff that happens when a node is viewed or when a page is viewed, and to make the comments go through that same sort of whole life cycle would really slow down the performance of Drupal. So it was decided quite a while ago that comments should be a sort of a standalone entity to increase performance.
Good to know. So basically, a node is a content item, and node is sort of a difficult word because it doesn't have a whole lot of meaning in the real world. And so oftentimes when I'm talking to clients, I'll try and interchange the word content item there. And that's oftentimes done even in Drupal. Basically, when you click on the content, item in the administer menu, it's what you're managing there is the nodes.
And users don't really need to worry about that, you know, what the definition of node is. Just every now and then you'll be on the Drupal site and somebody will refer to something as a node, and it's just good to know what it is. But they try to keep it out of the Drupal help text and in the interface.
Yeah. And if you're writing a module, keep that in mind too. Try not to refer to things as nodes. It's a developer term.
Yep.
So there are different, we talked a little bit about the workflow stuff last week, and there's a box on the page if you're an administrator in Drupal, and you can check off the different states of a node, and we should talk briefly about what those different states are and what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
You wanna head that up, Matt?
Yeah, let's do the first one. The first checkbox you usually see in that authoring options group is published. And generally what published means is that it's visible to people that have the access content permissions. If you unpublish something, if you uncheck that box, then the only users that can access that are the ones that have the administer nodes permission. So this is good to do with some sort of workflow where you have an idea and you want a place to jot it down. So you put it on the site, and then you contact your peers that are helping you on the site, and you do some sort of collaborative publishing that way. And then finally, when it's ready to go, you can check the publish box and make it visible on your site. So what's the next one, Jeff?
I've got moderated, the great gray world of moderation. We were talking about this a little bit before the podcast. To be honest with you, we're not actually that sure. It's hard to tell if this is a legacy feature or what, but my understanding of a moderated node is that it does not show up in the search. It won't show up in listings of pages unless, of course, it's promoted to the front page, in which case it would show up on the front page listing of the nodes. And the idea being that it's published so other people could come in and look at it, but it's not actually listed in places. And if anyone has a correction to this or an improvement or suggestions for how to better clarify this, please let us know. You can call 877-LULLABOT and we'll put your voice on the podcast. You can answer the question yourself.
So when you say listed, do you mean something like the tracker page that gives an overview of all the content on the site?
Well, actually, I just submitted a patch for Tracker that adds RSS feeds to the Tracker module, so you can get user-specific RSS feeds and also RSS feeds for the entire site, not just the items that are promoted to the front page.
Cool.
And I fixed it so that it does not show moderated nodes in either of the RSS feed or the listing, but in the past it has showed moderated nodes, which according to the great mind of CHX, that's a bug. So I fixed it. If CHX says it's a bug, I fix it.
You know, we should get CHX on here.
We should. We'll corner
him. He would know what moderated means.
We'll corner him in Vancouver and ask him the hard question.
The next checkbox in the authoring options area is promoted to front page or just promoted. And that pretty much is self-explanatory, I think. If you check that box, your content will also show up on the front page. It also, you know, you always have the page will always have a permanent link to its own page, but it will also show up on the front page of your site.
Right. And it also depends on how your theme works. We've developed some sites that the homepage didn't list any nodes. And so that promoted to home front page might actually mean promoted to somewhere else. But in a basic with the core themes sort of core functionality, that's how that works. But it can be used in other ways if your site needs to tag things in other ways to be promoted. So,
boy, I hope that definition didn't get too sticky. Speaking of which, that leads us to the next checkbox.
That was a horrible, horrible segue.
We'll see if I can unstick myself.
Sticky. What's sticky mean? Content items are sorted first by whether or not they are sticky. Then they are sorted by their date, usually. Again, we talked about the views module where you can sort of override some of these things, and there are some other things. I committed a module called Weight Module, which actually gives you some fine-tuning of the sticky column so you can actually sort of weight your nodes in lists so that they show up in different ways, so more important stuff goes to the top. But basically, things are sorted first by their sticky value and then by their date. Revisions. What are revisions?
Revisions. Revisions are a way to roll back. It keeps track of every time you edit a piece of content, and then what you can do is you can roll back to any of the previous versions. So it's a nice workflow addition to publishing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of wikis work that way, and the idea being that each time you publish, you know, each time you go in and edit it, it will save a new revision of the content so that you can, as you said, roll it back. Did I just repeat exactly what you just said?
Yeah, I think I did that for you too a couple times.
Good. Well, we'll just keep doing that. Again, like I said, this is just sort of a 101 kind of a baseline thing, so we'll just keep saying it over again. You'll get it. What's a user? A user is a person that is registered on the site. They get an account. They get stored in the database. They have a username. They have a user ID, which is a number that refers to them, their account. They have a password, and then you can add other things into the user, you know, store information about them and stuff like that. But that's what
they usually
user
have
is.
An email address too.
Yes, usually they do, because that's how Drupal does its authentication normally. Yep. Although I just committed a new version. People will be happy to hear the login toboggan is updated.
Woo!
Most people won't understand what that means, but some people will, and they'll be very excited.
Well, if we're talking about users, we should talk about profiles.
Let's do that.
Profiles are the FlexiNode for users. To reverse that analogy.
We're going to have to define FlexiNode at some point, too.
It's just a way to add any sort of metadata information you want to users. Say if you want to add a first name field or a last name field or date of birth or favorite color or favorite type of cookies, you can enable profile module. It's a part of core, and then you can add all those sort of fields that you want to your site. And then you can choose whether or not you want them in the registration form, whether they're required, all that sort of stuff.
Whether they're public, right.
Yeah.
So you can get your users' birth dates and send them birthday cards without everyone knowing that everyone on your site is old. That's how my sites are, old people.
I think we've thrown around the word module quite a bit without ever describing it.
Well, let's talk about what the heck is a module. When I first came to Drupal and these different content management systems, I was really confused as to what was referred to by all these different terms, and module was a big one. What the heck is a module? What does it do? How do I get it to happen, and why should I care? Matt.
That's a lot. It's basically the way that Drupal works. It's an abstract architecture. So if you want a given piece of functionality, like profiles for users or search functionality, they're encapsulated in files called modules. So the idea is that if you want search, you can go to the modules page and just turn on the search functionality. So that's pretty much what a module is. Drupal ships with some core modules, and then there are a bunch of contributed modules on the Drupal site, too, that have other functionality that you might want for what you're doing on your site.
Yeah, it's all about functionality, basically, as opposed to themes, which tend to be more about design, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So if you could think of themes as Drupal designs or skins, or other words that people use for that kind of thing. And for the most part, themes won't have a whole lot of functionality to them, and modules won't and should not do a whole lot of design presentational kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's sort of a loose relationship where they work together, where, you know, modules say, hey, theme, you can have control of how this looks, but other than that, they stay pretty separate. But the idea is the same. Is Drupal is this architecture, so you can add modules, you can add themes, and make the site sort of your own.
Right. Right.
So a theme is the design of the site, and those designs can be rendered out in different ways. And Drupal calls the thing that does the churning out a theme engine. And so there's different, you may have heard of the Smarty template or PHP template or X template. Those are all referred to in Drupal as theme engines. So if you're downloading a theme and it says, you need, you know, the PHP template engine, then you would have to also install that. Luckily, in Drupal 4.7, PHP template is now part of core, and that's one of the most popular templating engines out there. So it's just something that's good to know, but you probably won't have to worry about it that much, the theme engines.
And right. until you actually make a site that you want to look good, and then you should figure it out. And we'll explain that down the road. Okay, Block.
Yeah, blocks are just a place to stick content on the site. In Drupal, you have regions, such as the sidebar, the left sidebar, the right sidebar, the footer. And what you can do with blocks is modules can add blocks, which are pieces of content, or you could go in and add blocks manually and just tell the theme where you want it to go.
Right, and actually in the block configuration, you can actually tell it what pages to put it on. So put this on the home page, but don't show it on any other pages, or show this only on the user login page, and that kind of thing. It's pretty cool stuff.
Powerful.
Basically, little sidebar items, and mm-hmm. examples of blocks in Drupal.
User login form, which Jeff loves.
Love it. Every site should have 100 user login forms on their homepage. No one will ever guess that it's a Drupal site. What are some other blocks?
The who's online. You can make the search form a block. What else do we have?
That's
a pretty good start.
Yeah.
As you install different modules, one of the best practices is to check the blocks area just to see if it's exposed any new blocks that you could turn on for your site. You know, if you turn on aggregator module and then you create a feed, it makes blocks for those too. So it's a good practice just to check the blocks page in the admin interface.
Right. So for instance, on Drupal.org, the stuff on the right-hand side of the page in the right column, blocks.
And you don't install blocks. You install modules that then make blocks available.
Right. So blocks are tend to be sort of visual things, little visual chunks of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. Relatively concise. Yeah. What is a role?
Roles are user roles. They're a way to group users by permissions. By default, Drupal has two roles. One is an anonymous user. The other is an authenticated user. When somebody comes to the site and is not logged in, they are an anonymous user. As soon as they're logged in, as soon as they create an account, by default, they have the authenticated user role. Now, the really cool thing about Drupal is that these roles, the names are just arbitrary. And you can assign whatever groups of permissions you want. So on your site, if you want an anonymous user to be able to create content, you can do that. By default, they're not allowed to create content. But the power of Drupal is that you can go in and configure these things for however your site's going to function.
That was a good answer. So let's split this glossary up into two episodes. What do you say, Matt?
Yeah, let's do it. That's just how wonderful Drupal is. There's just so many things to talk about.
Yeah. We have a few more things. We'll cover those in the next, and then we'll go on to some other intro to Drupal stuff. Wow, Drupal is complex, man, huh? Jeepers, creepers. I had no idea. Well, I guess I had an idea, but I didn't realize it was going to be so much. You know, stuff just go through the glossary. So, well, anyways, we'll do that next week. If anybody has any questions, comments, or suggestions for the podcast, call 1-
Or rotten fruit.
Rotten fruit, yes, please. Send us rotten fruit through the telephone or through email. 877-LULLABOT. That number is 877-585-5226 in the U.S. and Canada, or send us an email to podcast@lullabot.com. You can go to the lullabot.com website and fill out the comment form. We love to hear from everybody because we're always looking for ideas and want to talk about what you want to hear. So if you have questions or any of that kind of stuff, let us know, and we'll try and address them on the next podcast.
Thanks for listening.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.